This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. A more relaxing weekend for many of us without the sirens that go with, that have gone with some of the recent weeks that we've experienced. But some really good news coming out this morning. The government has finally given the green light for the residents of 7 of the 13 communities in the Gaza envelope area, which were worst hit by the Hamas terror invasion in October 2023, to allow them to return back to their homes. Finally, 21 months later, they will be finally returning back to their homes. And we're talking about residents of Re'im, which of course is a kibbutz, but also very closely associated with the Nova Music Festival that happened near to Re'im. Kerem Shalom, Nirim, En HaShlosha, Sufa, Nir Yitzhak, and Nativ HaAsara. Those are the seven communities, kibbutzim and communities, that have been authorized formally to be able to return home again. And this comes after the defense ministry has said it is safe for them to return back to that area, and also after significant renovations have taken place in order to repair the damage that was caused. So the official notice is that those who wish to return from tomorrow are free to do so, that the government subsidy that has been given to residents of those communities since they were forced to move out on October the 7th will end officially at the end of July. So they're given a month to move back.
So they don't really have an option, though. So they really do need to start getting back to where they were.
Well, I mean, they have an option in the sense that they could potentially remain wherever they are and be on their own steam.
Right.
Many of these communities have sort of recamped themselves in the central part of Israel, and there are lots and lots of videos and stories going around about kibbutzim, kibbutz communities that have been set up in Tel Aviv, and they've set up operations, coffee shops and shops selling produce and things like that, which has represented a focus for those communities while they're away from their homes. But there is little doubt that many of the residents who have come from those areas just love the kibbutz lifestyle. They love living out in the open land. They love living in the south of Israel where the weather has its own little speciality. And I have little doubt that they will all be really itching to get back to their homes and to start to rebuild those communities. Of course, having suffered the loss of so many of the members of those communities, so starting from where they were is not really an option. They'll have to create a new reality for themselves against the backdrop of all that has happened over the last almost 2 years.
Not easy at all. So it's so layered, there's so much to have to deal with. IDF activities in Gaza have intensified in recent days, maybe indicating that a new phase of the war has been entered into. What is the change?
So there's little doubt that the focus, that at least the public focus, is very much back on Gaza. We heard news last night coming out of Gaza that there were so-called belt of fire attacks taking place at the hands of the IDF in order to still continue to root out those who were responsible, who are responsible, who have been responsible for carrying out terror attacks against Israelis and against IDF soldiers. We heard yesterday Again, another loss of an IDF soldier with great broken hearts. We unfortunately bury our young people who are so brave and who go out to do battle in order to try to clear that area. The IDF, doesn't matter how long they're going to stay in Gaza, will never really be able to clear the tunnel infrastructure completely. That's an almost impossible task given the complexity and the extensive nature of the tunnel network in Gaza. That's an almost impossible task. But to the extent that they're able to do so, at least to try to secure a slightly better future, the IDF continue to operate in those tunnels, to destroy the tunnels, to destroy the infrastructure that the terrorists have created. We had an interesting story coming out of Gaza from the Gaza Food Fund that has been set up with the US aid and cooperation and sponsorship, that something like 20 of their workers, American workers in Gaza, distributing food to needy Gazan citizens, have been killed by Hamas. That shows the extent to which the power battle continues in the Gaza Strip. The IDF has also been evacuating more areas within Gaza to try to clear out so-called create clean zones so that they can at least know that terrorists are not operating within the civilian community. So the way in which the war is being conducted in Gaza at the moment is very, very different than the early days of the war. It's much, much more accurate, more pinpoint, and very, very carefully conducted in order to avoid civilian casualties, but at the same time to somehow be able to root out terrorists who continue to hide within the civilians and who continue to operate. And when we see those food trucks coming into Gaza, and when we see how they get hijacked by Hamas terrorists, people who are working on behalf of Hamas, then we understand that Hamas still has a certain power in Gaza, in spite of the IDF operating to kill their leadership and to take their infrastructure down and to destroy their weapons storage facilities and all the other weapons and the missile firing facilities. At least we've managed somehow to get control over the missiles, that we don't experience the same missiles that were being fired even after the IDF had very, very strong control over Gaza. This is a minefield, literally, which is being worked through by the IDF at the moment. And of course, the latest pronouncement from the White House is that there will be a ceasefire in Gaza this week, according to the words of President Trump. And all I can say is that I sincerely hope that he's right and that he can deliver on that, because the ceasefire in Gaza means our hostages will come home. 633 days that hostages are still being kept in the hellhole, in the tunnels in Gaza. And there will only be a ceasefire, and there can only be a ceasefire when the hostages all return home. So I hope that President Trump has some trick up his sleeve that he can pull out and he can deliver a ceasefire in Gaza. I will be most delighted. I'm sure that many Israelis will be the same. It will mean that our soldiers can come out of there. It means that our hostages can be brought home. It means that those who have been killed will be brought home for burial. That's really what we want to see. And the quicker that happens, the quicker our hostages are released, the quicker we will be able to get to a ceasefire.
The Shin Bet has thwarted a major terror attack in the Hebron area. What do we know about this?
So, what's fascinating about the story is that it appears like way down somewhere in the depths of the news. It's not like headline. It's not like something that's significantly important. It's just one of those things that the Shin Bet has been up to amongst many others. But then you read the details of the story, and there were 60 Hamas members that the Shin Bet has arrested in what they've considered to be one of the largest West Bank anti-terror operations in over a decade. These guys were operating in the area of Hebron, and that the Shin Bet has been following them. Apparently, they found a significant complex and large-scale Hamas infrastructure which was exposed in Hebron, and they were planning a variety of attacks in the near future. Now, when our security services fail in their task to prevent attacks like this, Then we see things like October the 7th. That's when they fail. When they succeed and they arrest 60 people and they uncover this major plot to attack and to kill a significant number of people around that area, not only in the Hebron area, but in fact wider, then it kind of appears way down the news somewhere. And I think that the time has come for us to recognize much, much more the fantastic work that our security services do and are able to achieve and are able to prevent terror attacks, rather than to simply criticize them with great justification for the failures. If they fail, then their criticism, of course, is justified. But I think that equally, we need to recognize the unbelievable work that these that our Shin Bet agents have done in order to uncover this terror network. And ironically, many of the people that they've arrested were actually recently released from Israeli prisons. So these are people who are released prisoners as part of the prisoner exchanges, and or the prisoner release in exchange for some of our hostages. I think that's a more accurate term rather than a prison exchange. These were
100%.
prisoners. These are people who have committed crimes, who were let out of jail just in order to allow hostages home, and now they've been recruited back into the whole terror network. And thankfully, we have fantastic security forces who are able to track down, to be able to monitor what's going on, and to pounce at the right time before they're able to carry out their dastardly deeds.
There seems to be a little bit of an attempt by Netanyahu, and I don't know if I am reading it correctly, to boost and bolster the image of Shin Bet. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was interesting that the Prime Minister was did make a speech yesterday, visited a Shin Bet facility, and was very complimentary of the work that the Shin Bet has been doing in recent times. And I think that, many of us in Israel feel a slightly we have sort of two opinions at the moment about our security services, because there is undoubtedly a massive failure that needs to be recognized on October the 7th, and we need to understand how that happened, and we must most certainly learn lessons from those failures, undoubtedly. Having said that, the work that has been done up until then, and by the way, the IDF really falls into the same category, because the IDF also had major failures which led to October the 7th. But since then, in spite of that setback, the security services and the IDF altogether have really recovered the situation. They've really retaken control of what was a situation that was out of control. And they have even taken greater control than before. And they've managed to achieve some incredible victories and some incredible achievements over the last 2 years, almost 2 years or so. And of course, the attacks that were carried out in Iran and all that happened surrounding that is a massive, massive victory for our security intelligence agencies, the Mossad in particular, but the Shin Bet to some degree as well. And of course, to the IDF who've carried it out. So I think that there has been a certain rehabilitation of the image of the IDF and of the security services. And I think the Prime Minister has been working, now that he seems to have got rid of the people who were potentially the ones to be held responsible for the failures, in the form of the former chief of general staff of the IDF and the former head of the Shin Bet. The head of the Mossad still remains the same head who was in office on October the 7th, but effectively the leadership that was potentially being held responsible for the failures have kind of stepped aside, and there's new leadership in place. And I think that now the Prime Minister is trying to somehow help to rehabilitate the image with that new leadership. And I think it sort of is also an attempt to try to help him to somehow avoid the inevitable state inquiry, which people are still calling for, into what happened on October the 7th. I think by strengthening the image of the security services, he feels that he may well still be able to avoid an official state inquiry into those events.
And I know we don't have a lot of time, but it's really important to hear a little bit about this. Is the Israeli civilians that have clashed with IDF forces on the West Bank? What is going on here?
So this is a very, very serious situation that we find ourselves in. Over the weekend and even last night, there were Jewish civilians who were clashing with Israeli Defense Force soldiers, mostly in the area around the West Bank. And these are very, very militant individuals who are being kept away from their ultimate targets by the IDF, because these are individuals who would quite like to attack Arab towns and villages in the area that they live in. And the IDF is stepping in to say, that's not okay. We're not going to allow that to happen. And as a result of the IDF stepping in the middle, the IDF effectively has been attacked by these individuals in order to try and push them aside so that they can ultimately advance on. And I think we need to put all of this into some sort of context. And of course, October the 7th is a critical moment when the settler communities in the West Bank suddenly understood, or maybe not suddenly understood, but understood a little bit more, that their neighbors, the Arab towns and villages who live very, very near to where they are, all hold a relatively negative view, a very antagonistic view of their Jewish neighbors. Those clashes have been going on already for the longest time, but October the 7th created even more fuel to this fire in order to create the antagonism. And so they've tried to provoke one another into somehow doing something which will then justify a more severe, violent reaction backwards and forwards. And I don't think that we can hold any one of the two warring sides more responsible than the other. I think that they are both equally responsible for the antagonism and for the provocations and for the violence that carries on between these two communities. The thing that I really find very distasteful is the possibility that Jewish civilians can attack the IDF, can attack the Israeli soldiers. That for me is just completely goes against anything that I believe in. These are soldiers who will defend those civilians down to the last man
And
when
have.
the situation and have when the situation requires, and yet they are being attacked because they are preventing those individuals from somehow pursuing a further objective. So I find this to be unacceptable. I'm delighted that some of these Jewish civilians have been arrested and they will be held accountable for their actions. And I think that the leadership of those communities really need to stand up and saying, attacking IDF soldiers is not okay. And somebody needs to be very, very firm in their leadership and make sure that that sort of a thing doesn't happen again. It's just unacceptable.
That's I couldn't agree with you more. And what do you think? 0618951019. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. We can listen to Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.